Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Literally and figuratively, a very good Friday, everyone. DiPietro, Canty, Rothenberg with you, 98.7 ESPN. And Rick, if we thought there was a chance of Major League Baseball starting at some point in May, well, the UFC did not set a good example as they now have canceled next Saturday's big event on a private island via Dana White. Now, I don't know that it was White that made the ultimate decision, but UFC canceled for next Saturday.
Yeah, I think first of all, it's not apples to apples. Second of all, this was not Fight Island. This was actually the fight, UFC 249, that was going to be held on the Native American tribal land in California. That was okay. This one.
Well, regardless of where it was going to be, canceled for next Saturday. Not going to happen.
Well, it was canceled because, I mean, ultimately ESPN and Disney stepped in because I don't think what they were trying to do, especially when, you know, I get what he was trying to do, but when all of a sudden you got, I mean, the state of California, you know, intervening, saying we'd rather you not do this. And then I thought Kay brought up a great point yesterday as far as, you know, what it actually would be involved as far as if, you know, if the state of California did want to shut this thing down, would they be able to shut it down? And it's going, I mean, conflicting reports as to, you know, because it's on Native American land, could they step in? I think just it came down to this is not on brand for ESPN and Disney. I mean, there's something about this that felt a little bit, and you're going to love this, Dave, because I did get accepted to Harvard. It felt a little nefarious, Dave.
Oh, nice.
And it felt, you know what I'm saying? And then the other point that I thought Peter brought up yesterday, which is a good point, was that, I mean, you're talking about this is a combat sport, and we keep talking about the, you know, the health of the athletes. They'll all be tested. That's great. But the reality is, you know, God forbid someone gets hurt in the ring, the closest hospital is 3 hours away. You don't want to have that on your hands. I mean, if God forbid something bad happens and you can't get the guy into the hospital in enough time, I mean, that would be the last thing that ESPN would want. So, I mean, they're gonna cancel this one, and then, I mean, he's hell-bent on coming back. So if it ends up being on his private island, which he's still going forward with a month from now, we'll see. But I just think that the more you read about this, the sketchier it sounded. And I don't think that, you know, our company, I give them credit, didn't want to have any hand in this.
Chris?
That's the most important thing. I mean, so good on ESPN, ABC, Disney for stepping in and saying that this is not something that we should move forward with. Just because you can do something doesn't necessarily mean that you should. And you have to have awareness based on what's going on battling this pandemic. I think that the best thing for UFC and for all of its television partners to do is to delay this, to find out more information about the virus and how we can contain it. Most importantly, how we can protect the participants if we do move forward with live sporting events. So, I mean, I know that this is not what Dana White wanted, but this is probably what's in the best interest of the sport in terms of making sure that everybody is healthy and as safe as possible when we do resume activities.
Yeah, but it feels like Dana White is the kind, is like the rebel that'll say like, oh, you know, go to hell with everything else. I want to put on the sport. I want to put on the sport more so, I would think, than these other sports. The Dana White seems to have this tunnel vision of, Rick, I want to put it on and we're going to put it on. And I don't think it was him that ultimately made this decision that this is not going to take place next Saturday.
No, it wasn't him. And I mean, he stood by this. I mean, if you listen to him in some of his interviews, I mean, he's still, you know, he's still, the narrative surrounding this whole thing is that, I mean, he could have got it done. Like, it would have happened. Like, he did whatever it was going to take to get this UFC 249 on television. I just think when you're ESPN and all of a sudden you're getting phone calls from the governor of California, you know, saying that we would rather this not happen. I just think part of the problem is, and I understand, you know, why he's doing it. I mean, you want to capitalize on the fact that there's nothing on television. I mean, this is for a lot of people that don't normally consume UFC. This is a good opportunity to get their first
sure.
taste of it because there's nothing else to watch. But, you know, it almost feels, and I'm reading articles all this morning about this because I knew we'd talk about it, like the lack of communication, like the lack of transparency. Like, I'm sitting here reading some of this stuff, and you got one of the senators of California in her. I mean, the reason why she wants it postponed is because she doesn't want participants and support staff carrying the virus back. Well, I mean, that completely flies in the face of the report we got this morning that all the fighters, all the people involved in this event would be tested. There would be COVID-19 tests. So, I mean, it feels like if you had explained that, like, okay, we have tests available. Everyone at this is going to be tested. If they're negative, they can participate. If they're positive, then they won't be a part of this. Like, we're not in the business of spreading the virus. I mean, I think Chris made a great point. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really what this came down to. Yeah, we could do it, but it's a bad look for ESPN. And more importantly, God forbid, worst case scenario, something bad happens. And then you don't have the means to protect these athletes or care for these athletes. I mean, yeah, you want to have it if you're Dana White, but this is probably cooler heads prevailing as far as this was concerned.
800-919-3776. And here's the question. I'll pose it to you, Chris. Is Rick talked about the medical attention you need because it's in the middle of really nowhere, California. Well, how do you go ahead and put this on a private island? Because you're certainly not going to have any better medical attention on a private island than you'd have, in God knows where, California next Saturday.
Yeah, this doesn't seem like it was well thought out in terms of the overall logistics and what the fighters are going to need in order to support them both leading up to the event and then after the event. So I think that them putting some time between now and when they host their next UFC live event is the right thing to do. And, you know, one of the things that I heard yesterday, and I thought it was really interesting, Anderson Cooper hosted Dr. Gupta and Magic Johnson on a CNN town hall last night. And one of the things that Magic talked about was having reliable, rapid testing in terms of being able to get back to the normal way of doing business with sports. He said, until that happens, it's going to be hard to host these events and to put these athletes in competition and to have spectators in these venues until you have that in place. And right now, we just don't have that readily available for these sports leagues. So when UFC talks about putting on an event like this and testing everybody involved and making sure that everyone is safe, it's just one of those things that we have to actually make sure that that is available to them if they're going to move forward with any events. That's the first thing that we have to do.
Yeah, I think the other thing we need to understand too, Dave, is, I mean, there was a reason why President Trump has the commissioners of the four major sports and Dana White and Vince McMahon on a phone call. It wasn't to tell them that they shouldn't do it. It was to brainstorm ways where they could actually get sports back on television.
Yeah, I think he's desperate for sports to get back.
I think there's a lot of people that are. And I just think that as far as UFC 249 was concerned, I just think when you have the pressure coming from the state of California with senators and governors, that doesn't line up with the ESPN and Disney brand. It doesn't.
And beyond that, Rick, it doesn't line up with the overall tone that the health care professionals are trying to set for the country in terms of what we need to be doing. I mean, we're starting to see some returns on the social distancing, even though the death toll is as high as it's ever been. You're starting to see the rate that people are admitted into the hospital, the projected rate of infection is not as high as it once was. So while it seems like we're doing the right things, we're still more work to be done. And to do anything that would change that overall tone is probably not what's in the best interest of the public. And I just feel like with sports, that's one of the big things that sets the tone for the country. And I just, with UFC continuing to move forward with this event that was scheduled next week, I think it might give folks a false sense of security on where we're at with this pandemic.
It almost feels, Rick, and tell me if you agree, like it was the kid that said, all right, we're going to do this. This is a great idea. We're going to do this. And the adult had to step in and say, hang on a second. This is not the brilliant idea you think it is. And now the adults have to step into the room and kind of save you from yourself.
Yeah, I think that was part of it. And you know, the other thing I thought was a little bit, I mean, it didn't feel like the entire thing was necessarily above board. And it felt like, listening to him talk and some of the detail, it just felt a little bit dirty. It was almost like, forget saving, you know, the UFC from itself. It's saving the fighters from themselves. Because I think, I don't want to say that, you know, Dana White is what was, you know, preying on the fact that, you know, the careers of these athletes and as far as, you know, trying to make money. Like, this is not a sport where a lot of these people that are fighting have the amount of money where they can just sit back and not do anything. You know what I mean? Like, the whole idea, like, we're not telling you where we're going. Like, we're not giving you any details. You're just going to, here's your travel itinerary and you just show up. I don't know, man. That just did, the whole thing kind of felt a little bit sketchy to me.
Yeah, from jump, it did. Right?
Like, I mean, who's going to say no? Like, who's going to say no? Like, and the other
right,
thing
you're desperate
said this
for
morning,
money. Right? You're desperate
well,
for money.
But then the other thing he said this morning is, I just want to let my fighters know that, you know, everyone that agreed to step up and fight will be taken care of. Well, what does that mean? That everyone that said, you know, said no, isn't? It's like, you do me a favor, like, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. The hell with, you know, with how dangerous this could be, or the negative consequences. It's almost like, hey, listen, you're going to fight, and if you don't, I'll remember it. I don't like that.
Yeah, but does that surprise you? I mean, really, from that sport, does that surprise you? I mean, if I told you that the NBA did that, I think you'd say, that doesn't sound like Adam Silver. But to hear that Dana White did something like that, at least for me, Rick, that's not all that surprising.
I was actually a little bit surprised, Dave. I mean, where UFC is now, how far it's come, the fact that, you know, we've jumped on as a partner with UFC. I mean, there's an appetite for UFC fights. He puts on great fights.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's been legitimized. I mean, before you couldn't even get it on TV. Now
it's a sport. I mean, it's a legitimate sport. Nobody argues that at all.
And I wouldn't want to jeopardize it. If I was Dana White, I wouldn't want to jeopardize it at this point. I get you. I mean, I get the incentive to get it on. But I don't think at all, like, it doesn't have to be at all costs.
And that's why he's backing down and why they're not hosting that event on April 18th. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. I was listening to Brett Okamoto on SVP last night, and the thing that he said was, you know, Dana White is used to ruling his universe, but his universe expanded beyond his control. And that's ultimately what happened when you start talking about the media partners that are involved in UFC now. And if it's something that they don't want to do, if there's something that they're uncomfortable moving forward with, then it's just not going to happen. And I think that's why he decided that it was probably best to call this whole thing off. But, you know, according to everybody that's in the know, I guess they're going to look forward and plan for UFC 250 to happen in May. So I think they're trying to build toward that now. But there are still a lot of logistical hurdles to being able to get to the point where everybody feels comfortable hosting that type of event.
Just think of how bad that would have been as far as, okay, say, you know, say this 249 does go on, right? And you have this thing televised on ESPN. And then all of a sudden, because, I mean, there really is no definitive, I mean, at least I haven't got any definitive answer. I mean, it depends on who you ask as far as, you know, who actually polices the tribal lands. Like, is the state of California allowed to send authorities in to shut this thing? Just say they decide they want to do that. Like, say the phone call from the governor of California to ESPN is, hey, listen, I'm just letting you know. I don't care what you've been told. If you guys hold this thing, we're going to send the authorities in. This thing's going to get shut down. Imagine you're sitting here watching this on television, or it's just about to start on ESPN, and then all of a sudden this thing just gets raided by state authorities. How bad a look that would be for ESPN.
Be awful. Be awful. And I don't, honestly, I don't even think that Dana White would mind that. But I think that ESPN would be horrified by something like that. I think that ESPN would just, you know, take their head and put it between their legs, be horrified by that.
But Dave, how tone deaf can you be though with what's going on throughout the world? Not just in this country, but what's happening globally. I mean, if you're Dana White, this is not the time where you want to buck the trend in terms of what medical professionals are suggesting. What people in the federal government, whose job it is to protect the public health, you don't want to start doing things against their recommendations. So I just, for me, what it really comes down to is, if they say that this is something that's ill-advised and that we probably shouldn't move forward with it, at this point, Dana White, to protect everybody that's involved with UFC and with the sport as a whole, the best thing to do is to not hold that event.
I agree with you, and I believe Rick does, so the three of us are in complete agreement, but don't you think that if he was, you know, asked honestly off the record, that he would say, look, I've made my whole career, Rick, my whole life has been people telling me that I'm not going to be able to, or I shouldn't do this, and pushing through and finding a way, and this was just another one of those things I was trying to do.
No, if this was strictly his decision, and ESPN wasn't his partner, and they didn't tell him to pull back, you would have had UFC 249. I think the other thing that you need to consider, too, is, and we were kind of talking about this with baseball. If, God forbid, baseball starts up, someone, you know, all of a sudden COVID-19 goes through these teams and you got to shut it down. I mean, let's get one thing straight. If sports is going to get back, you know, as soon as humanly possible, you're going to need the support of the federal government and state government. You know what I mean? Like, they need to be on your side. So if they're calling you, telling you, hey, we don't want this to happen, you can't, I mean, that jeopardizes, and you go do it. I mean, that jeopardizes all the other sports as well.
Not just all the other sports. That jeopardizes everyone.
Yeah.
Rick, I mean, you're talking about the infrastructure, you know, with, you know, the medical staff and the doctors and all the people that are involved. I mean, if you're doing something that could potentially start to infect people at a higher rate than what we're seeing around the country, then I think that's something that puts everyone at unnecessary risk. And that's why when we were talking about baseball earlier this week, one of the things that was going to have to happen was that Major League Baseball and all of their officials were going to have to get people that are in the government, that are in medical services, to sign off on whatever plan that they were going to try to implement in order to move forward. If you didn't have that, it would be hard to justify bringing live sports back.
So, Stephen A. Smith on First Take, and I do not agree with this one little bit, says, two fighters, one ref, who are medically cleared, are a risk worth taking, said Rick. Someone needs to take the risk to prove that we can go ahead and do it. I don't know. Seems like quite a risk. And you know what? It's not three
guys. But time out. They've already, I mean, I don't know why he, of course, I mean, they've already proven it. I mean, we've already watched it, and everyone came out of that healthy. Like they already, that's already been done. I mean, this is it's the circumstances surrounding the event that make it a no-go. This isn't as simple as, okay, you got, you know, all the athletes come in, they're tested, the referee's tested, you got medical professionals there, they're tested, and then we go do it. It's the fact that, you know, the governor of the state said he'd rather not have it. The fact that you're putting it on, I mean, you're not telling anyone where it is, first and foremost. I mean, Greeny asked him 100 times. He said, no, it's going to be on ESPN. So, and the fact there's no hospital, I mean, again, going back to, you got to always plan for worst case scenario. God forbid one of these guys takes a couple shots to the head, gets swelling on his brain or something, and you can't get him to the hospital in time because it's 3 hours away and he dies.
Yeah.
What does that do now?
Your sport is probably shut down.
Not only is your sport shut down, all the other, what people need to understand is all of these sports leagues will not get started unless the states want them to start and unless the federal government wants them to start. Mm-hmm. You need to get cooperation from everyone involved for this to happen. If a state decides they want to shut it down and they want to continue to have the stay at home, you're not going to get anything accomplished.
But I think the federal government, Chris, does want to push this forward.
No, I think that they want sports to come back sooner rather than later, but I don't think that they're going to ignore the recommendations from Dr. Fauci, the people at the CDC and other federal organizations that are recommending that we all practice social distancing and shelter in place and self quarantine. I don't think that they're going to do that, in terms of bringing sports back when it goes against what they're recommending that we practice as a society. I just don't see that happening. I think that they'd have to sign off on sports coming back before we could even entertain a path forward with actually watching games being played.
The risk was not worth the ultimate, the reward. It wasn't. Here's the other thing though, Dave. He can say Stephen A, and I love him, he can say whatever he wants to say. He wasn't on that phone call with the governor of California in ESPN. I wouldn't have been surprised if the governor of California said, listen, you guys can pretend like this is going to happen. We're going to shut it down.
Mm-hmm.
I can promise you. We know where it's taking place. We're going to send people in. It's going to be shut down. So if you guys want to avoid the embarrassment, you should cancel it, because otherwise we'll cancel it ourselves.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised by that even a little bit. All right, Brett Okamoto, who does a great job covering the UFC, was on Get Up this morning and was asked, when can we expect the UFC to get back to action?
It's difficult to predict anything in this climate, right? But I think the UFC's next pay-per-view is a month from now. It's May 9th. It's UFC 250. That's what it's called, at least right now. And yesterday as well, they were talking about fights on that card. They were talking to some of the athletes there. They were moving some things around. That card was supposed to take place in Brazil. Obviously, they got to remove a lot of the Brazilian fighters if they're going to have it in the States. So I think, you know, they're going to take a little break. Dana White told me after that interview, you're not going to see me for a little bit because I put a lot of work into this. Now I got to regroup a little little bit, but I think when they reconvene and they start talking about things, you know, Las Vegas is shut down until April 30th. The White House has told us that the country is shut down and the social distancing measures are in place until April 30th. But if that remains the case and we see a little bit of improvement just in this general situation, like you said, Dana White wants to put on fights. And I would say that May 9th, that next pay-per-view is, it's optimistic, but it's feasible. It's what I would guess right now.
All right, so that's a month from yesterday. So is it realistic to think that we have fights a month from yesterday? I think that's fair, Chris. I think that's a reasonable, you know, goal to for a month away to be holding UFC 249 or 250 or whatever it's going to be.
No, it could happen, Dave, but what Brett Okamoto said, and I think that's the thing that people should hold on to, is that they're not going to go against any recommendations from the federal government. So if our government is saying this is what we want to do, then, you know, UFC is not going to have the blessing of its television partners if it's doing something that the federal government is recommending that we not do. So I just think that's the biggest hurdle that they have to clear in terms of being able to get to a live event. But then you also have the issue of making sure that you have rapid, reliable testing for all the people that are going to be involved in putting together that event. So I think those are the biggest things that they have to address. But we're talking about a month from now, so there's the possibility that things change and that we get to a point with this pandemic where people are more comfortable holding an event like UFC 250.
In order for these sports to start up again, these leagues to start up again, it's going to be facilitated by local and federal authorities. I mean, they're going to help make it happen. They're going to provide you with, you know, with the tests and everything. They're going to give you the blessing to have your sports continue. And again, I mean, why would you risk setting yourself back when, I mean, first of all, we don't have enough answers yet. Like who knows? I mean, hopefully we flatten the curve. I don't know if we actually know yet. I mean, this whole thing could look a whole hell of a lot different, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month from now. We're not even, I know it feels like it's been a year since we've seen sports.
Yeah,
we're not even a month yet,
right?
It's not even a month yet. So why would you risk setting yourself back by holding an event that the state doesn't want you to hold, when if you just, you know, try to be as patient as possible? I mean, there'll be a time when you just have to say, you know what, if this is going to happen, it has to happen now. But we're not there yet.
No, we're not there yet. And I think, Chris, I think the state does want it to be held. Like, I think that the state would push for it when it's the appropriate time. It just, according to you know, Governor Newsom, this is not the appropriate time to push forward and to try to have this kind of a fight.
Well, Dave, we talked about it. I mean, President Trump was on a call with the commissioners of the sports leagues and Dana White this past weekend, and they were trying to discuss the particulars around when we could have a return in sports. But I think everybody recognizes that it wasn't something that was going to be imminent just because of us not having enough information about how to slow the transmission and the spread of the virus, and then obviously getting to the other side of the apex of this thing in this country. So I think that everybody recognizes the importance of sports, but everybody also understands that it's going to be a while before we're actually able to hold events and do it safely as to not risk the health and well-being of the athletes or the spectators or the people that are supporting them. So I think that's obvious that everybody wants sports back, but nobody's going to do it at the unreasonable expense of the athletes and the people that are involved with hosting such events.
Yeah, I think it comes down to two things. I don't care what the league is, Major League Baseball, NBA, NHL, maybe ultimately college football in the NFL, is you're going to have the rapid response tests so that you can have everyone tested before you put them in a situation of playing a game, being in close quarters, whatever it ends up being. And secondly, there has to be a way to treat this. Like, there can't be any unknowns. You can't have one of the players raise his hand and ask a question, well, what happens, you know, what happens if, you know, my blood type, you know, doesn't handle COVID-19 as well as someone else's blood type, whatever it is. Like, I have this underlying condition. Mm-hmm. I mean, can I die? If the doctor's response is, well, we don't know, then you can't have sports. Unless you can treat it safe, like, unless if one of these athletes gets it and it's treatable, where you don't run the risk of, God forbid, somebody passing away, then you can't, then sports can't start.
But how can you make that guarantee? I mean, look in the hospitals now.
I'm saying until you can.
Right.
Until
but it doesn't feel like that's, doesn't feel like we're 10 days away from that. I mean, originally this was, well, old people really get barraged by this. And then you see that perfectly healthy people in their 30s, 40s, and 50s are dying from this. So I'm not saying you're wrong. I don't know how close we are from being able to look someone in the eye and say, if you get it, you have no worries because you will absolutely beat this thing. I don't think we're anywhere close to that.
Well, I don't think anyone knows. And that's part of the problem is there's too many unknowns. Like, you're looking to check as many boxes. Like, you're going through the, you know, all the things that need to happen, all the different risks that you might run. Like, you need to check off as many of those boxes as possible. And I think for me, of all the sports we're talking about, the one that has to be as close to 100% of all the boxes checked has to be college football, has to be college athletes. They're not getting paid to play. Like, I mean, there's inherent risk, but these guys aren't kids. These you know, young men and women aren't getting paid to play their sports. You cannot risk. I mean, that for me would be a non-starter for college athletes.
I think collegiate sports has to be much more conservative with this than the professional sports leagues. I 100% agree with you with that. But I mean, I think that we have to give this some time to find out more information. And one of the things that you're starting to hear come out now is that once we get enough testing for the people that need it and that people that actually want it because they're showing symptoms of the virus, I think the next step is they're talking about making sure that they can test people to see if they have antibodies for the virus. Maybe they've already had it and their body has built up an immunity to it. That's one of the conversations that's going on now. And I think as we have more time pass, we'll have more insight as to the feasibility of being able to have the fall college sports actually played, if we're actually going to have a college football season. I think that that piece of information is what's going to determine the risk assessment for how these colleges and universities view trying to have these fall sports.
Let's bring him in, one of our favorites, to the show. Give us the breakdown of where we are with Major League Baseball, and that, of course, is the one and only Buster Olney. Good morning, Buster. How you doing?
Dave, I'm so sorry. I'd echo the feelings of a lot of people for you. Just been thinking about you here the last week.
Well, I appreciate that, and I got to tell you, as tough of a time as this been for my family and myself, certainly the outpouring of love and people reaching out that I haven't even spoken to in quite a long time has really been remarkable. And I know you did, and just so many people in the industry, and just so many people in general. So I appreciate you, and your kind words, and thank you for thinking of us at this difficult time.
Yeah, I just heartbreaking to read about that, and that's what, you know, when we, because we're in the industry, you're asked all the time about, you know, how do we feel, at a time of that baseball, and you know, your reality and the reality of a lot of people and what they're dealing with right now, that is the baseline, and that's obviously a whole lot more important than what happens in sports.
Sure, but you know, in fairness, sports does matter to us, and sports does matter to a lot of people, and the president did have a conference call with you know, all the important cogs and pieces of every sport last weekend. So you're right. I mean, it pales in comparison to real-life stuff, but it does matter, and getting it back does matter to a lot of people. So that being said, where do you think we are? We heard this, you know, rumbling earlier in the week. I guess it was this week. I can't even keep track of time anymore.
Yeah.
Of maybe May locking down in Arizona and the 30 teams and just, you know, making it a big bubble and playing there for four and a half months. What do you hear? Where are we as far as that's concerned right now?
There's a great article on ESPN.com today that was put together by Jesse Rogers and June Lee and Alden Gonzalez, who talked to a number of players anonymously about it. And there was so much skepticism in their words, which is exactly what I was hearing when we first started to get drips of this last week, and then Jeff Passan's detailed story the other day, that people had so many questions, so many more questions than the answers that were to be provided. You know, would you be able to keep players healthy? You know, the whole issue of being away from your family for 4.5 months to maintain that biodome, for lack of a better way to describe it. Even, you know, for me, right down to the base of there was a line in Jeff's story about how, you know, officials from Major League Baseball, from, you know, the Player Association, have been assured by health officials, you know, that they could potentially be kept safe. And my question was, okay, well, who were those officials and what were they saying in January, February, and early March? Because one of the, I think, real questions about this, and the reason why it's so different than the push to get sports back after 9/11 is you can't assure the players that they're going to be healthy. You can't assure their families that they're going to be healthy. You know, you have a sport with older coaches and managers with, you know, specific health conditions that they've had in the past. You can't tell anybody now that they know exactly what they need to do because there's just so much doubt about how to deal with a virus.
Buster only joins us here on the show. Buster, for you and the people that you've talked to, what are some of the most important things that would be necessary, you know, if and when Major League Baseball does restart?
There has to be a better, clearly, and I think that the words from the players in that article reflect that there just has to be a greater understanding of how to deal with the coronavirus. There has to be some assuredness for the players that if they do this, they'll be testing, that they'll have an idea of how to deal with it. And I also think, and it's clear from a lot of the private conversations I've had with players, they want to make sure it's at the right time because they don't want to have a situation where suddenly instead of becoming a solution, they become part of the problem and a hot spot develops in the in the biodome, so to speak. And suddenly resources are being pulled away. And there are ethical questions, I think, that you have to ask about, you know, do you want to should resources be given to professional athletes that aren't being given to the average person who's dealing with this? And I wrote this the other day. I really feel like that they need to, as they walk through these scenarios, to at least talk through the worst-case scenarios. What happens if a manager dies? What happens if a coach dies? You know, what happens if players get really sick or family members of players contracted because of this and they die? How is everyone at that point going to feel about the decision to come back too soon? And that's why I think there has to be more concrete foundation on how to deal with a virus before you're going to have a lot of players sign on to it.
Buster, I know this might be the furthest thing from baseball fans' minds, but we can't ignore the economic consequences for a delay or a cancel in the regular season. So I guess my question to you is, with everything that's happened, the financial impact that could potentially be felt by these teams, it's not going to all be the same once we do get back to baseball.
It's not. And I think the easiest way to think about it, though, is if you look at how businesses, small businesses, big businesses, you know, the airlines are being affected, that's right in line with what's going to happen with professional sports teams. I've told you guys before, I think among the four major sports, baseball is going to get hit the most because of the timing of this. The fact that the NBA and NHL, at least they, you know, we're close to the end of the regular season. We're in the off season in the NFL. In baseball, there's going to be a lot of money that they're never going to get back. And once the game returns, and I'm hearing this from a lot of folks at the team level, the financial landscape of baseball is going to be totally different. I heard one estimate of a well-to-do team, and I'm not going to mention the team because it's not an official number, but they're anticipating losses of over $150 million. And it's to the point that whenever baseball gets the go sign, and right now all the rosters are basically frozen in place, I think it's going to be like 9:30 at the stock market. You are going to potentially see players dumped, contract teams looking to dump contracts, looking to make moves, and it is going to be fast and furious action whenever that go sign comes because they're going to be teams just trying to get out from underneath as much debt as possible. You think back to the player strike in 95. When baseball came back, the Montreal Expos ownership anticipated big financial losses, so they non-tendered Larry Walker, who's going to be inducted to the Hall of Fame this year. They eventually dumped Pedro Martinez in a trade to the Boston Red Sox. That's the type of stuff you're going to see when baseball comes back.
Buster only with us here, 98.7 ESPN. So we talk about this biodome in Arizona, and this is the closest we've gotten to a real return of a major sport. I mean, the NBA won't even really say anything, and MLB is at least trying to put something out there to see if there's any realistic chance of it happening. But my question to you is, announcers are going to be needed, right? They're going to have to lock down announcers and camera guys and doctors and everything.
Yep.
If you are asked, Buster, if they said, you know, ESPN, we're going to send our crew and we're going to do Wednesday games and Sunday games and we'd like you on the crew to do the games and they approached you, would you do that?
Boy, I'd have to get more information, but I think your question is exactly right on. And from what I understand, the traveling parties for each team that they were talking about in this Biodome idea was 50 people per team. So you're talking about essentially a community of 1,500 to 2,000 people that somehow they were going to work to keep them locked down. I think, like a lot of the players, I need to know a whole lot of more information about testing and about how, you know, what is the plan to keep people in that dome safe. And look, I think it's important for baseball and the Players Association to have constant conversations about contingency plans, because at some point it is going to be go time and they have to get ready. I just feel like that this, as Jesse Rogers wrote in a piece the other day, talking with an executive, you know, the plan that got out the other day was in the top of the first inning of a 9-inning game. There were so many details that they had to work through, and they're not close to having that solution. There is a lot of concern to the point that, you know, one of the ideas that I heard from an official was, you know, you hope at the very least at the end of the year you might be able to have some limited WBC-type competition with the best stars, because I think it's going to be really important that between now and spring training of next year, there's at least some kind of baseball product to stay on the radar.
Buster only joins us here on the show. Buster, here's what didn't make much sense to me as far as the Biodome Arizona plan. I mean, I understand, I mean, trying to get, you know, the 30 teams. Here's what didn't make any sense to me, though, is why would you try to do something where you had that many people? Why not just, I mean, has there been any thought to maybe, I know it would be extreme, but I mean, I think at this point you have to start looking at extreme options, just redoing these schedules and trying to keep, you know, maybe splitting it up half and half, or at least having, you know, each division get the division games out of the way. I mean, at least you're talking about almost 60 games, like trying to find a way to split the teams up so you don't have so you don't have as many people in one spot that you have to worry about.
Yeah. And, you know, but of course, the questions, and I agree with you, but of course, the challenge there is are sort of these rolling, rolling dictates coming down from cities, from mayors, from states. Like, we could talk about, for example, you know, the potential of having a limited schedule for each team. But then the other day we heard from I'm sure you guys saw the comments from the governor of California, where he has doubts about whether or not there are going to be games in his state in early fall of any kind. And so Major League Baseball would obviously be at the mercy of that. That's the part that I think that we can't say enough is that the people who are making these decisions in professional sports, Major League Baseball among those, they have so little control over this. Like, they have to adhere to the guidelines that are placed down at the state and local level, and that is an incredibly complicated situation. Last week, I think it was the city of Toronto, for example, basically said no public events until the end of June. They clarified that later and said that doesn't necessarily apply to professional sports, but you would have to assume that they would want to, you know, keep that in place. And so what do you do with the Blue Jays in that case? What do you do with the Dodgers? What do you do with the Padres if you have the local states buckling down? I mean, just living here in New York, the idea of a professional baseball game in this area anytime soon seems completely out of the question.
Buster, here's where I guess where I was going. What if you did this, and again, I mean, you're 100% right. You have no control. I mean, it all depends on, you know, the state mandates and everything else. But let's just say, for example, you had, you know, Arizona as a possibility, and then Florida as a possibility. Could you somehow find a way to just, and this would, baseball traditionalists would hate this, but just take the teams that are already naturally having or have their spring training homes in Florida, keep all those teams in Florida, and then all the teams that are already in Arizona, keep those teams in Arizona, and just have those teams in each state play against each other, and then seed the playoffs that way? Like, the best teams out of, you know, this group of teams qualifies for the playoffs, and the best, like, no divisions, nothing else, no American League, no National League, you have a DH for both leagues, and then you let those teams play, and then you let the other teams in Arizona play, and then hopefully by that, you know, you've given yourself enough time where you can reassess after that, at least you're getting games played.
Yeah, and it's interesting you say that because in spring training, before this all fell apart, I did hear that idea, and there certainly are, and you can understand why, there are some high-profile agents who are pushing this, pushing a suggestion like that, you know, to keep some competition moving forward, to keep some broadcast, and clearly whatever sport can generate, whatever product, like with this NBA horse idea, you're going to have a lot of people watching. But again, I think it just comes back to what's happening in the local areas. For example, that Arizona idea, and if you read what state health officials are saying out in Arizona, they expect that the virus is really going to hit out there next month. And so you could come up with a theory like that, but it would have to be something that would be workable under the state and local mandates, and that just complicates everything so much. But your idea is one that they have talked about.
Buster, I know we're a long ways off from fans actually being in parks and watching a baseball game, but there was a study done by Seton Hall that said 70% of Americans would feel uncomfortable attending a sporting event without a vaccine for the coronavirus. There's also been speculation by healthcare officials that we might not ever get back to the normal that we had before this pandemic. So I guess my question to you would be, are we going to see a shift in how baseball fans go out to these parks or how they consume the sport as a whole?
I think absolutely, and I think you could, based on the data that we're seeing like that, and the human reaction that we would anticipate for something like this, I do think not only for baseball but for all professional sports, because, you know, not only will you have fans who may be reluctant to go to the parks, but let's face reality with those terrible financial numbers that we're seeing. Where's the disposable income, and what's going to happen with that? You know, money that people may have otherwise, might have used to watch, to follow their favorite team, you know, is that going to dry up in a way? And that's why I mentioned the financial landscape could potentially be so different that already, you know, what I'm hearing from teams is, boy, those teams that don't have a huge number of long-term contracts on the books, those are the teams that are going to have a tremendous advantage whenever go time comes. So you look at like the San Francisco Giants, who've been going through rebuilding the last couple of years. They're getting through the back end of contracts of guys like Buster Posey and Brandon Crawford and Brandon Belt, and they don't really have much on the books. And on the other hand, when you look at teams like the Angels, it just took on, you know, Anthony Rendon. They've got Trout locked up to a lot of money. There's going to be a before and after situation with these contracts to the degree that, you know, the speculation we had with guys like Mookie Betts, where you wondered if would he be the next $400 million guy. I think the expectations among agents is coming down dramatically because they know that the revenue stream is going to be so much smaller than it was before all this happened.
So Christian Yelich might look like one of the smartest by taking that deal in Milwaukee. Buster, last one for me, and this may be a silly question, but I figured, I mean, if anyone knew, you would know, so I'd ask you. I'm sure you've probably already seen the story with Wimbledon, how they had the pandemic insurance they've been paying for the last 17 years.
Yeah.
Does Major League Baseball, NBA, do they have pandemic insurance or no?
I have not heard specifically about that, and I have not asked that question either to teams. But my instinct, based on the responses I'm hearing from within the sport, is no. But I don't know the answer to that, and I can't give you information about, hey, I talked to this official, that official, and I heard that they did.
All right, Buster, listen, we appreciate you joining us. Stay safe, stay healthy. Thank you certainly for the kind words, and we will talk to you soon.
Okay, guys, stay safe.
All right, good stuff. That is Buster Olney, who really is just wonderful and terrific to talk to, no matter.
Why wouldn't you, though? I mean, I asked the question because why wouldn't you? I mean, you're talking about multi-billion. I mean, you just saw the valuations come out for, you know, the Yankees $5 billion,
right,
the Cowboys
billion.
$5.5 billion. Yeah, I mean, Wimbledon's spending, I mean, $2 million a year for 17 years. I mean, never knowing. Like, I mean, whoever knows if you're going to have a
pandemic. But think about how much it would cost for the insurance. And is there a company that can actually pay that out?
Well, I don't know. They just paid Wimbledon $141 million.
What, $140? I mean, you probably have to play billions of dollars out to Major League Baseball.
Yeah, that's a different number.
You know?
Well, no. I mean, depending on what you settle on. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's not a company that wants to spend billions of dollars to pay out an insurance policy. But, I mean, some would be better than none.
If you're baseball, if you're basketball, if you're football, the backstop is the federal government, right?
Yeah, I mean, I just say if you could work out a deal where I'm paying whatever it is, you know, 10 million, 15, 20, whatever it is a year just to be covered, and if, God forbid, my season gets canceled because of a pandemic, I'm going to get, you know, $500 million or something like that. I mean, that'd be better than zero. It'd
be better than nothing, which looks like is what they're going to get. But I agree. I think the government does help out. Chris, you saw this. What was it? Seton Hall put this poll out, right?
Yeah, that is correct, Dave.
And it was 70%+ of the respondents. Now, granted, it wasn't a huge sample size, but the 70-plus percentage of the respondents said that they would not go to a game until a vaccine was in existence for COVID, right?
Yeah, 72% to be exact, Dave. And you know what? It wasn't a large group of people, but I do think it's reflective of attitudes toward going to sporting events and just being in large groups of people in general, because based on everything we know about COVID-19 and how deadly this virus can be, I think people are wanting to keep their distance from other people and stay out of harm's way.
Yeah, there's no way that I'm bringing my kids to any game where I'm going to be, you know, almost locked in arm with other people until there's some answers. And maybe we'll have answers in 2-3 months. Maybe we will. They'll say, listen, you know, if you've had it or you tested positive, you're safe to go back out or something like that. But Rick, there's no way that I am bringing my kids to a game until I have some assurity.
Dave, you don't even want to go to the grocery store at this point by yourself. I mean, so yeah, you're right. And I understand why the survey came out the way that the survey came out. I mean, if you were to ask me, and I love sports, I played professional sports, that question now, I would say no too. I mean, that's where we're at. I mean, there's so many questions of how it's spread, how it could be treated, how it's going to affect you. I mean, I don't know enough about me and how, right, I would be affected by it. Like, I don't know if I have any, I mean, I can't even tell you when I got my last physical, which bad on me, but I don't know if I have any underlying health issues that, I mean, if I got this, it could be deadly. I don't know. I mean, I think once we get past this and we come out on the other side and, you know, we're back to whatever the new normal is, I think the other huge obstacle is going to be the financial aspect of this, with how many people have lost jobs and how many people have the means to go to a sporting event with how expensive it is.
I wonder if it's not going to be that expensive, though. I wonder if just some of the sports are going to realize that they have to kind of incentivize.
Yeah, but that's relative. But that's what? Relative, though.
Sure.
But, I mean, that's relative to how much, I mean, you're talking about disposable income. Like, how much disposable income are people going to have?
Probably very little, if any.
Okay, so, I mean, you're still going to have to pay for parking. You got to pay for tickets. And when you go there, you're going to have to pay for food. I mean, it's still going to be more money than you want to probably, I mean, more money than you probably want to spend on something that you could just watch on television.
Absolutely.
And then when you couple that with the risk of, you know, potentially dealing with that, then that's going to be a problem. Like, a lot of people are just going to say it's not worth it to put yourself in harm's way if you don't have a vaccine.
I mean, people will come back. Eventually, people will come back.
Absolutely, they will.
I guess that the time frame is different, just because, I mean, this has obviously gone on for as long as it's gone on and is going to continue to go on. But I mean, if you polled people a week after 9/11 and said, you know, would you go, I mean, with what you just witnessed, would you go put yourself in a situation where you're in a stadium with, you know, 50,000 people? I would have said no. I was scared to death after that.
I think everybody was.
But people finally came back, and people eventually came back.
And people will come back from this as well. But I just don't know at how quickly. Now, I will tell you this. If you said, what sport is packed to the gills the quickest, Chris, for me, that's not even a debate.
It'd be football.
And college football specifically.
Yeah,
like,
but that's...
I could see...
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I could see Giant Stadium, you know, when the Jets play there, the Giants play there, like some Northeast places not being filled out. But I would be shocked if you didn't have Ohio State and Clemson and Oklahoma and Texas and Florida, 80,000 people whenever they open the gates. I would be shocked.
Yeah, I think college football would be the one where you'd have, you know, people still wanting to clamor to get into those stadiums where you're talking about 80, 90,000 folks just because of the pageantry involved with it, the passion that they have because of the attachment to that, to their school. I think it's a different level when you start talking about college football. But I mean, you know, this is one of those things where based on where we're at in this country, I don't know that we'll ever get back to that, Dave. I don't know if we'll ever see stadiums where you have 90 to 100,000 people packing it to watch an event. I don't know if that's going to happen anymore.
I think with Dave, I'm 100% on board with you. I mean, in order for these college programs, I mean, in particular the football programs, to allow fans into their stadiums, because I mean, that would signal that the colleges are open, like they're not homeschooling, like that there will be students at the colleges.
Yeah, open for business.
So if it's safe to go to classes, I mean, that would signify to all the students that if it's safe to be in a class with all these people, in a lecture with however many people, it's going to be mm-hmm. just as safe for me to go to watch one of these football games.
Yeah, but a lecture is what? 50 people, 70 people, 100 people with some kind of distancing. I mean, these games in Clemson are,
what do you mean, some kind of
5,000 people, you know, wall to wall.
Yeah, but you're still, I mean, and you're going to, I mean, it's not, you're not going from your lecture to your private residence. You're going from your lecture to your other lecture to the cafeteria to your dorm room.
Yes, you're going to have interaction with people. That's true. You're right. But
there are going to be a lot more people in the stadium than there would be on campus.
I mean, 90,000 people. Yeah. And for some reason, a lot of these college football coaches, guys, just will not accept how serious this is. Like Dabo Sweeney saying, oh, when we get to August, I have no doubt in my mind that we're going to have college football. And then you listen to the doctors and the experts saying, like, wait, you can't make statements like that. We have no idea. And that's the thing, Rick. We don't know. And rather than say, you know what, we don't know, let's kind of give it time and see what we know as we move towards August and September and the start of college and professional football. You got guys like Ryan Day and Dabo Sweeney coming out saying, no, we will have college football. Fear not. No worries.
Yeah, but that's just blind faith. I mean, they don't really truly, I mean, they have no idea.
But people listen to these guys like they're speaking the gospel. That's what's so upsetting to me.
Well, you can choose to believe whatever the hell you want to believe. I mean, if you want to be, you know, that optimistic that you think definitively that you're going to have a season, then you choose to do that. I don't think that's at this point a rational way of thinking. I don't agree with it. I mean, but that's how they're choosing to look at this thing.
Yeah, but I think the healthcare officials are going to rule the day on this. So mm-hmm. if they say that it's not safe for, you know, these colleges and universities to have football games for the guys to return to practices leading up to the season, then it's not going to happen. And I was listening to Ryan Day this morning talk about it. He said that the biggest thing is just trying to figure out how much time we need in order to get ready for a season. He ballparked it at around 6 weeks. But, I mean, based on where we're at now, we don't know when it's going to be possible for those kids to come back to those facilities. We just don't have any idea. So to sit out here and to say that we're definitely going to have a college football season is irresponsible. Do I think it'll happen? Sure, I do think we'll have football this fall, but nobody can say that with any degree of certainty. And I think that's the danger of having these college coaches come out and make these statements, because it's almost as if they're setting an expectation where they really don't know whether or not they're going to be able to follow through.
Hot Take Friday. Rick's got a hot take. We each get 5 questions. You have to tell us what sport it is heading in right now, though.
All right, who's going to ask the first question? You guys decided?
We haven't, but does that matter?
No, I just wanted to listen. I just wanted to set the stage. I mean, I'll tell you right now, it's an NFL take.
NFL. Or Chris, I'm fine either way. Would you like to go first? Do you want me to go first?
No, I'm going to give you the honors, Dave.
All right, I'll break it down by conference. Is this an AFC team?
No.
No. Okay. I don't see why that's funny.
I love your responses to the no.
Rick, is it an NFC West team?
No. I know where you're going with the NFC West, because that was going to be potentially my other take, but it wasn't spicy.
All right.
Gotcha. All right. So we know that it's either the North, the South. All right. Is it the South? NFC South?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I know where mm-hmm. we're going here. All right. Mm-hmm. So that's mm-hmm. my second. Chris?
Okay. If it's the NFC South, is it the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
No.
Mm. Mm. Not the Bucs. All right, so we're 2 questions in each. I'd say he wouldn't go Panthers, but maybe it is something about just how awful they're going to be. Could be the greatness of the Saints or the Emmanuel Sanders.
No, I don't think that's it.
No?
Mm-mm.
Falcons? I'm going to say, does it involve the New Orleans Saints?
Yes, it does.
Ah, okay.
All right, okay.
All right,
so now we got it. So now we know it's the Saints. Okay.
It's the New Orleans Saints. Third. Okay. Is this a take that has something to do with one Drew Brees?
No.
So we know it's the Saints, and we know it's not the quarterback of the Saints. You think it could be, I'm spitballing with you, Chris, and you're not to answer this, Rick. You think it could be a Sean Payton type of hot take?
I think it would, yeah, I would almost.
It could be Michael Thomas, right? Sean Payton, Taysom Hill, Emmanuel Sanders.
I would put Sean Payton and Taysom Hill as the leaders in the clubhouse.
Okay. All right. Does it involve either Sean Payton or Brigham Young quarterback Taysom Hill?
No.
Oh.
Wow. Okay. So I'm down to my last question.
No, I think this is your fourth.
This is my fourth one?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's a fourth.
Okay.
Although Dave's cheating. He's asking two-parters.
Yeah,
why is that cheating?
I like what he did.
How is that cheating?
Well, that's like if on Monday you have your hot take and me and Canty narrow down the team, and then I ask you, like, let's say it's the, it's the Tampa Bay Bucks and it's your take. And I was like, does this involve Tom Brady, Mike Evans? And I just go down the list and name every player
okay.
on the offensive.
But if the answer to that is yes, now you haven't narrowed it down very much.
That's a good point. Well played. Well played. All right, Chris, give me your fourth question.
Okay, so it's nothing to do with those guys.
So it's not quarterback related.
Is it related to a defensive player on the Saints?
No.
Hmm.
All right. You guys are starting. I'll give you a little hint. You're thinking too micro. Think more macro.
Think more macro. More Mac.
I told you this is spicy, man.
This is not your regular.
This is a Friday. And oh, by the way, that song. Whenever I hear that song, it's Friday. That's my favorite music we play. But this is spicy now, Dave.
It's spicy. It's
gonna like be I'm hanging oriented. This. I'm hanging it out here. And I don't have pants on, so I mean this is hanging out.
Hmm.
I think I'm.
What are you thinking?
I'm thinking it has something to do with the Saints' outlook for the 2020 season.
You think he could be saying the Saints are going to be the number one seed in the NFC?
Or maybe the Saints could miss the playoffs.
No.
Or,
you think? I mean, realistically, can the Saints miss the postseason this year?
In the NFC?
With seven teams?
In the NFC? Yeah, I don't think that's... That would be a stretch.
Now, I know he doesn't love Brees, but I can't see him saying Saints don't go.
Maybe the Saints don't win their division?
Mm, but is that a hot take?
Nah, that's not spicy.
That's not spicy enough?
Nah, that's not spicy enough.
This is spicy. All right, I'm gonna go and say you think the Saints of New Orleans will be the top-seeded team in the NFC this postseason.
Close, but not it. No.
How's that spicy?
I think that'd be spicy.
All right.
Rick, would that have been spicy?
That's pretty spicy. I mean, to go from Canty saying that my spicy take would be that they don't make the playoffs, you saying that they're the number one seed in the NFC. I mean, that could be spicy-ish.
Well, I mean, they won 13 games last year, and the year before that, they were the number one seed in the NFC. I don't know.
That's why that's not the take.
Okay.
I like to get a little bit spicier than that.
Okay.
But it's along these lines, Chris. It's along the lines of the outlook of the Saints season.
Okay, so the Saints are going to, they're going to the Super Bowl?
Yes, sir. The Saints will represent the NFC in the Super Bowl.
I look at what we do.
Correct.
I got to be honest. Now, that is spicy. But, Chris, I got to be honest. The way you and I just strategically moved through that, worked in unison, brainstormed off each other, I think we deserve tremendous kudos right now.
Yeah, I think we did a solid job of being able to work through it. But Dave, I gotta tell you, I'm a little surprised. I was expecting something a lot more spicier than that.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of feel like the Saints are on the short list of teams that people are expecting to make it to the big game.
We haven't even got through the draft yet, and I'm making Super Bowl predictions, and that's pretty damn spicy.
Well, I mean, we haven't gotten to the draft yet, and you can't point to a whole lot of holes on that team.
No, but I'm also, the reason why I said it is because you can't go 3 years having the kind of just rip your heart out of your chest losses and then have your quarterback donate $5 million and not expect some good fortune here. Let's line it up. Last year.
So this is a karma pick.
You know what?
Yes.
It might be a karma play. But here's the one thing I'll say about it, Rick. I don't trust Drew Brees at this point.
Ooh. Now that's a hot take.
I just don't.
That could be next Wednesday.
I don't trust Drew Brees at this point. I looked at what happened in that playoff game, man. I mean, you can hang that playoff loss to the Vikings on Drew Brees. The interception and the fumble off of the sack, I mean, those were game-changing plays.
No, I don't disagree with you.
And the playoff game that they the last playoff game that they had in 2018, it ended because of that interception in overtime.
Yeah, but timeout. You're talking about, I mean, we had the Minneapolis Miracle. Then we had the most blatant pass interference call not called in the history of
professional. True story, but they still had the ball first in overtime, and he threw an interception.
Yeah, mentally they were done at that point, though. I give him a pass for that one. I mean, could you imagine being on that team, how devastated you would be if you just watched that happen? This thing goes
I'd never
in overtime.
Get over that.
I would be done. I'd still be curled up.
No, I'm not kidding. I don't think I get out of bed for 6 weeks.
I looked at that offense. It was a different offense when Taysom Hill was under center in that playoff game versus Drew Brees. I don't know what that means or how much stock you can put in it, but I don't know. I feel like we're coming to the end for Drew Brees.
Yeah, but you add Emmanuel Sanders. Your defense is still, I mean, their defense is still really good. You got the best wide receiver in the sport. I think Alvin Kamara, I think they address having another running back to kind of give you that change of pace. Alvin Kamara is going to have a bounce back season. And then on top of that, this was why my take really came to fruition. Part of it was a comment play, I'll agree to that. But the fact that Sean Payton said that accidentally this is Drew Brees' last season, with how well respected and loved he is in that locker room, I mean, do you imagine if that is the case and his teammates know that, how they're going to go out this season and play to try to carry him to a championship?
Would be a great swan song story, wouldn't it?
You can't go 3 straight years the way that they went and then not have some kind of payoff at the end for Drew Brees and what he just did.
But, Rick, you can't go 3 straight years and have a team that's got double-digit wins each of those years and not expect at some point for it to fall off.
Why are you trying to throw cold water on this take? $5 million.
He doesn't like your take.
I'm just pushing back on the take because I don't agree with it. What's wrong with that?
You can't argue karma. Stop it.
I pulled up the odds for the NFC South, by the way. This is what I do. I'm juggling many things as the show goes on. Saints,
yeah,
according
degenerate.
To... No. I think I'm trying to bring...
You mean you pulled them up? Where did they been up?
No, I pulled them up. I did a Google search, and I found a few different sites. I went to the one that I trusted most in DraftKings, and I pulled up the odds. Saints are the favorite to win the division at -110, followed by...
Tampa Bay.
At +170, followed by Atlanta at +600, and way in the distance, Carolina at +1400 to win the division.
Yeah, but Teddy Bridgewater is such a good fit for that offense.
I don't understand that. I got to tell you, and I know that Mike Tannenbaum loves Matt Rhule. Early on there, I don't understand what he's doing.
Well, you know, stop. Don't pretend.
I don't.
It's the same reason. No, it's the same reason why Bill O'Brien got rid of DeAndre Hopkins. Matt Rhule does. He can't have that kind of personality in his locker room. He's trying. I mean, he's got a way he wants to coach that team. And Cam Newton's got a humongous personality.
I don't mind moving on from Cam Newton. I think that Teddy Bridgewater makes you too good if Trevor Lawrence is the ultimate goal.
I don't know if Trevor Lawrence is the ultimate goal. I think he's a college coach. In order to have the team run the way he needs it to run, you have to have some sort of winning. Can't go in there. I mean, I know he's got a 7-year deal, but you can't go in there and go 2-14 and try to coach the way he wants to coach. Guys, it's professional sports. They'll quit on you in a second. That's what scares me about Joe Judge a little bit. The team's not going to be great. You got no OTAs or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to start pulling that, like, oh, Saquon Barkley's got to earn his plank. Stop. I mean, that's going to go over. I mean, that'd be like a lead fart in the locker room.
Is he going to do that, or is that what he said at his press conference?
I'm just going off. I'm just going off what he said in the lack of success that most coaches from New England have.
But I mean, the press conference was the first impression for his players, right? Right, Dave? So I mean,
sure. But yeah. Saying it and having coach speak when you're addressing the media is different than, you know, when you're in the locker room and you're saying, all right, Saquon, you could potentially lose the job to Deion Lewis here.
No, I agree with you from that standpoint, but because you don't have any offseason, because you don't have the opportunity to establish that rapport and that relationship with the players, it's gonna make it a lot more difficult once they do report for training camp.
Yeah, I agree. It's not a great situation going on with the Giants or any team. I think it's much more magnified with teams that have new coaches though and new systems.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. They're going to have to do some. I would imagine at some point they revisit some of the CBA rules as far as how much contact coaches can have with players.
Shouldn't they though? I mean, drastic times call for drastic measures, don't they?
Yeah, you should be able to. I mean, Daniel Jones should be able to pick up the phone or whatever kind of FaceTime, whatever you want to do. I mean, he should be able to be in constant contact with Jason Garrett.
Yes.
They should be able to have position meetings, Rick. Like, you know how these kids, because they're not going to school, they have virtual learning and they have, you know, actual, you know, classes. They should be able to have that for the NFL players in position groups. Like, you should be able to have a defensive line meeting and a defensive meeting and a quarterback's meeting. Like, you should be able to have all of those meetings.
100%. 100%. I got a position meeting plan for tonight, as a matter of fact.
You tell us about that on Monday, right off the bat.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg, weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.